The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
Haunted Nights Live. First things first, we would like to thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. This is Alistair Cross, and I'm here with my co-host and collaborator, Tamara Thorne. Thank you for joining us. Before we get down to business tonight, here's Tamara, who's going to tell you a little more about our upcoming novel, Exorcism, Book 3 in the Ravencrest Saga, which is slated for release on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Midnight. The witching hour, watery echoes in an empty building. The grand Greek pool at Ravencrest Manor bubbles and gurgles as chlorine-scented water pumps, flowing like cool blood in veins and arteries. The moon, full and high above the arch-glass ceiling, shines its light on the cobalt pool, casting splintered rays across the water, picking up golden highlights as it reflects on the constellations, the planets, and the moon set into the bottom of the pool. A spring and a thunk from the tall diving board, then a splash as someone dives in, and somehow water explodes into the air. The sound ebbs and flows with movement. But if no human ear is present to hear it, no eye to see it, can these things be real? Or are they merely tricks of light and sound, magic courtesy of Mother Nature? Soft golden lamps flicker to life, and then music, faint but unmistakable, rises and echoes. Eddie Cantor, if you knew Susie, like I know Susie. Oh, what a girl. Laughter, the sounds of a party, and voices of glasses clinking. Something white and serpentine slithers and stirs beneath the water like glistening cold silk, there and gone again in an instant.
All right. Ravencrest Exorcism will be released in ebook and paperback this Valentine's Day, February 14th. The ebook is available for pre-order now at Amazon. Again, you're listening to Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorne.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, our handles are at crossalistair and at tamarathorne. You can visit our Haunted Nights Live page on Facebook, or you can find us on Instagram at thornandcross or at official_alistaircross. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at AuthorsOnTheAir.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. All right, tonight we are thrilled to have a first-time visitor, Brad Keene. Brad is the screenwriter of the horror movies The Grudge 3, From Within, and The Grave Dancers. His collaborators have included the directors James Wan and Sam Raimi. He's also the author of the novels Virtual Pet Catchers and Hat Trick. Welcome to the show, Brad. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
You are welcome.
Glad to have.
I can't believe it took us so long to get you. We've had our eye on you for a long time, my friend.
Yeah, I guess. I think we were first scheduled to talk early last year, maybe.
I think so, yeah.
Probably, some time.
Yeah. All right, so I guess to start us off, let's talk a little bit about screenwriting, and then we can talk also about your books and stuff. But we'll start off with screenwriting, and this is such a notoriously difficult field to break into, but you did, and you've been in it for a while. So Can you tell us a little bit about your journey into screenwriting and how you got to where you are now?
Sure. Well, I mean, I went to film school in Orlando at Central Florida, and people like to say that film school is no longer necessary now because of all the technology, and it's sort of easy to learn on its own. But one of the high spots for film school for me was just you meet other like-minded people. So you meet a lot of good people that, you know, you could grow up in a town and be obsessed with filmmaking, but not necessarily come face-to-face with people who share the passion. Film school offers that. And then I went to Los Angeles with a group of people, and we all just dove in. You know, it's never really the right time to sort of go to L.A. and just go for it. You just have to do it. If you overthink it, some people who overthink it never make the move. And so we just, you know, just crazily jumped out there. And I originally wanted to write comedy, believe it or not. My two loves were always horror and comedy. And an opportunity came about to write a ghost story. One of my friends, Chris Skinner, was out there. He was working for the director, John Turteltaub, and his company was looking for a ghost story. So we just came up with the story that ended up becoming the movie The Grave Dancers. And really, we just threw ourselves into it, totally naive, you know, just jumped into it, jammed the script with everything we thought was cool. I think a lot of first-time writers just want the whole process to be really streamlined and quick. Hey, we'll write it, we'll do a couple passes, we'll get an agent, a director will get made. And it was the beginning of a long journey, and it's kind of terrifying to think. It took a number of years to get going, and we always thought we were closer than we were. We were lucky enough to get an agent pretty quick, and it went into development at a production company. And that's a whole other story, just a nightmare development can be. But ultimately, to keep it short, it found its way into the hands of a director, Mike Mendez, who's become a good friend over the years. And Mike was super enthusiastic about the material, and he found financing. And that's a really streamlined version of the ups and downs. And eventually, we got the movie made, and we shot in Greensboro, and that ended up being luckily the first feature, and it got released as part of the After Dark Horror Fest in 2006.
Oh, wow.
And it was the first batch when they were doing those, and it was released on 500 screens, believe it or not, for a very limited time. But we had a theatrical release, which was something in 2006 was still wasn't that hard. I mean, it was hard, but for a horror movie to get a theatrical release, it was still in the cards. Not so much today. I think it's much harder today. And you have other avenues like all the streamers. But so we were lucky enough to get that made, and that came out, and that ended up just being the first movie. Now, what you were saying about screenwriting being difficult, I will say this. I originally thought, hey, you know, it's going to be difficult at first. Then you'll make your first movie. Like, that's going to be the one big mountain to climb. And then things will get a little bit easier. You know, you'll get the big payday and the thing. But it's not really much of a secret at all. It's always difficult, and it's continuously difficult. And every project is its own thing. And for every one victory you have, you know, you have the other maybe 5 or 10 projects that didn't get made or came really close to getting financing and fell short. So screenwriting has been more of an inconsistent, continuous struggle, which was no surprise because people were saying that when I was in film school. But you still hope that sometime you'd turn this mythical corner and it would get easier. The town itself and the industry, and stop me if I start rambling about this stuff, it's constantly evolving, and the business is constantly evolving. And I was lucky enough to get 3 features made so far, but then the DVD market collapsed. And that had a big effect on the type of movies that got financed. A lot of horror movies got financed just because they knew they could make their movie in the DVD market, make the money back, excuse me. So when the DVD market went away, that changed a lot of the financing, and a lot of the companies that I was dealing with went away. So, screenwriting is very rewarding, but also very challenging at all times.
Right. So would you say that it's more like for someone who's trying to get into it now, would you say that it's more difficult now, or that it's easier now because of the way things have changed?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a danger of oversimplifying it either way. I would say it's an exciting time to be a screenwriter, and there's hundreds upon hundreds of series being made for all the streamers. So now it's definitely a good time and more possible than ever. The way, you know, the way to get from the script to a finished product changes dramatically from product to product. And so many times the pieces and the talent that you have attached to the script makes a big difference. But no one, ultimately, if it's what you want to do, you shouldn't be discouraged. I mean, you should be realistic, but you should. There are people out there who will hopefully believe in your project, and you can, you know, you have to believe that you can get it made or get it in the right hands, at least, and give it a chance of getting produced. Because otherwise, it would just be such a discouraging venture. But a lot of people.
So when you did finally get. When you did get the financing for the first movie, that must have been like an incredibly exciting thing. What did you do to celebrate? Can you what did it feel like to learn that somebody was gonna happen?
Well, you know, truthfully, I mean, it felt great, but we thought it was gonna happen much sooner. A few years than it did happen, and the financing we thought was going to be much greater. So initially, I think we were seduced. We were told the movie was going to have a much higher budget and hopefully be made sooner. It seemed as though the closer we got and more of the months ticked away, the budget slowly kind of went down and down and down as it became more realistic, like, hey, this is going to happen. Initially, someone says you're going to make your movie, They can throw numbers at you. You know, I remember being at a tequila bar, which is just probably the one point where everyone was just celebrating out of their minds, realistically, and like their head go crazy. And someone said, I remember someone saying that they were going to make the Grave Dancer for $15 million. And of course, I was thrilled. I'm like, oh, that's beyond my wildest. 15, that's crazy. Plus, in retrospect, I think one of the people had 4 tequila shots in them. And everyone was just talking, you know, wild. And so ultimately the budget kept going down, down, down. And what you see is, and this is the case in screenwriting a lot, especially for independent movies, you can just see your vision getting, or the director's vision getting compromised. So as exciting as it is to see a movie going to production, you also see the compromises start piling up as you get nearer to it. So it is kind of a mixed feeling. Like, hey, we're making a movie. Not quite the movie we thought we were going to make, but we're making a movie. And then ultimately, you put so much work in it that the true terror becomes the movie not getting made at all. And that kind of hangs over you. And that kind of remains, until you're really there and shooting, it always kind of remains this distant possibility that someone could pull the plug on it. So we were just dying to just get rolling and, you know, just get as much in the can as we can. And so it got made, but it's not quite the movie that we thought that was actually going to get.
Right. So in your time that you've been, you know, in the business, is there anyone who stands out to you? This can be, you know, an actor, another writer. It can be anybody. Is there anyone who stands out to you who is just, you know, who would you say is the coolest person that you've met?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I've met a lot of cool people. So it's disappointing that somebody's not cool. That's a great question. Sam Raimi was, you know, I didn't work with him too extensively, but he was super, super nice. Great sense of humor. Very funny. But I don't know, probably one of the coolest people is James Wan, who I know, who is insanely successful, but still really down to earth, a smart, funny guy, and very nice, very generous, and he's really, I think, what you look for to someone who can be successful and cool at the same time. So.
I love him.
Very cool. Yeah, for real. One more question about the movies. The Grudge 3. This is obviously the third movie in a franchise. To me, that sounds. Of course, I don't have any knowledge of screenwriting or anything like that. But to me, that sounds incredibly daunting because you've got two movies before it that you need to stick to. You can't just you're working within the confines of an already created universe and storyline to some point.
Right.
So what was doing that like? What was, and plus it was successful. I mean, these were successful movies, and so there's pressure there too. So what was that like doing The Grudge 3?
Well, that was really exciting. And I'll tell you what, my whole life I'd always look to these horror sequels, and it's very easy to say, oh, they should do this, or they should have done this. And suddenly I was thrown into working on a sequel, and I thought, wow, this is karma putting me into this situation. The amount of times I made it sounds so easy from a distance. With The Grudge, The Grudge not only had a certain amount of story-wise has gone down a path by part three, but stylistically it was so distinct. And, besides Grudge 1 and 2, there were two previous feature films that were the Japanese films. So there are four films preceding us. Now, this film, not only do we have we also had a new director, which was Toby Wilkins, really talented director. He did a movie called Splinter before Grudge 3. And so we had to sort of write and direct. He had to direct in the style that complemented the previous movies. Now, the big change in The Grudge 3, not to get too much in the weeds of the franchise, is the other movies were nonlinear, where they had different storylines popping back and forth. And though I haven't seen it yet, I believe they just released another incarnation of The Grudge a few weeks ago, actually. And I believe that follows the same formula as the original movies. My point being, we were given sort of the instruction to make our movie linear. So we had to sort of keep the feel of the previous movies, but tell a linear story that would hopefully. So that was a challenge, and it was the most amount of juggling in terms of plot points that we had to do. We had a lot going on in that movie. In the opening sequence, I can tell you, the boy from The Grudge 2 is murdered by a ghost in the beginning of Grudge 3. In an earlier version of the script, he was in it throughout the entire movie up until the end.
Oh, wow.
So, and literally very late in the process, we were asked to sort of take that part back. So I had to go in and sort of remove all of his scenes, which also left a huge void now. Well, now what some aspects of the story have to take the place because now we have 30 minutes to fill. With story,
right?
So
exactly.
it was elements like that you don't anticipate. That screenwriting, it could just draft. There can be a lot of changes, and you just gotta track them. And that movie in particular, Grudge 2, set up a lot of strange things that expanded the curse from Grudge 1, and we sort of had to follow through on it. The least being, I think Grudge 1 took place in Japan. Grudge 2 moved it to Chicago, and so I'm friends with a screenwriter. I've been like the screenwriter of Grudge 1 and 2, and I was saying, like, what have you done to me? What do you have any idea of the holes you've dug for Grudge 3? Anyway, so it was interesting, and it gave me a lot of empathy for other people who have to do sequels, because it's never like really clean, easy decisions. There's a lot coming into it. Also budget, also time, also actors and availability and schedules and where we're shooting it and exteriors. Sets had to be approved.
Right.
You only have so many days, so scenes had to be cut just because of time. And so a lot of things like that, you don't a big thing you learn when you write movies that you're fortunate enough to see produced is that, hey, this even though it may seem you're keeping the budget under control, there's only a certain amount of days you have to shoot a film. So you have to keep scene changes in mind. You have to keep location changes in mind. And you have to learn to write, you know, hey, you're writing a feature that you love. Great. Can we shoot in 18 days? I don't know. Can we shoot in 24 days? So that's what you have to think about. You know, these four exterior scenes, can we make it interior? I don't know. The things like that will be asked of you. And so that's a challenge of screenwriting. And I tell you, you guys as novelists, you have such freedom that you would not believe that goes away.
I can imagine that. And, you know, and speaking of which, you know, as someone who's done both, you know, screenplays and books, I'm curious as to which one you prefer and why.
Oh,
money aside.
Well, I will say, you know, screenwriting is a collaborative, process. Ultimately, you're going to be dealing with people. If you enjoy the people that you're working with, it can be very exciting. I was fortunate enough to be on set for my first two movies. So, and the directors I got along with, and so we had a really good working relationship for all three movies even. For prose, though, writing novels, I tell you, as you guys know, it's so enjoyable. There's something so pure about writing prose and really letting your brain just flow with something. Writing a screenplay, you're constantly thinking the interior, exterior. If a scene goes a few pages too long, your inner clock is telling you, oh, this is going on too long. And, you know, but with a novel, some of my favorite writing days that felt like true writer bliss was writing books. And I will say this, I mean, neither of my books, much to my agent's chagrin, weren't horror novels. And they were like, why aren't you writing horror novels? And it was really just because I needed a break from writing horror. You know, I mean, when that's all you're thinking about, and, you know, we have a great group of horror writer friends that hang out in L.A., and you'll have your friends come up to you and go, oh, man, I'm running out of ways to kill people. You know, how should I kill this one character? And so we discuss that, and it's kind of strange for your brain to be lingering on things like that too long.
That's true.
It's nice to take a break from just that subject matter.
Right.
But no, I like them. I like them both. I like them both. In a perfect world, also more importantly, when you write novels, I think you have more control over the IP. When you write a screenplay, you know, you sign away that copyright, and you sign away your script and story, and it's gone. So, So that's really, I don't think screenwriters really know how depressing that can be until your script is taken from you, which I've had that experience, both good and bad, where it just gets turned over to another writer. And suddenly the scene that you felt really intimate about, that you're working on day to day, is like in a flash gone from your life. And now it's with someone else. It's on someone else's desktop. That's a strange feeling, you know? As writers, you want to have control of your characters and stories. And I don't know if I've ever fully gotten used to the idea that you could write a screenplay and then people treat it like, hey, now this is a blueprint and we can just throw it up for grabs and we can just change it as we go. There's something about that still bothers me, you know? I know a lot of successful screenwriters who, you know, they just see it as part of the business, especially if they're lucky enough to be paid. They just go, hey, that's just kind of, you know, a script can go through five writers. I know of a project that had 11 writers on it recently, and that's insane.
Wow.
Insane. And then, you know, most of the time when you see a movie, the Writers Guild determines a credit, and you may only see three names, but there could have been eight writers on it or more, because most they won't get credit on a movie just because of arbitration and the way the Writers Guild works. So I try to know the amount of hands that have been in a screenplay. So to wrap up this answer, you know, writing a book sometimes, you know, certainly for me, I've never written a bestseller, but knowing how to have control over some of these stories, if people can read them, brings me tremendous satisfaction, but balances the chaos that screenwriting can often be.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know, every time we've you know talked to a few screenwriters, and it just it's a form of writing, and that's what I love. It's what I love to do. But it sounds so much more. It's just stressful, truly. Yeah, really.
It does.
but you know what? I think that you are absolutely, you know, great at what you do, and I'm looking forward to more. And on that note, I'm curious: is there anything that you're working on now that you can tell us about?
Screenplay-wise, I have nothing too specific. I mean, one of the last things I worked on was a movie based on an idea by James Wan called Smart House, and that is sort of still in development. I believe it's with Lionsgate right now. So hopefully, it's the biggest budget I've ever worked on. So it's just gonna, it has more hoops to jump through before it gets greenlit. But it's on IMDb, so it's been announced, so it's out there. So hopefully, that gets produced this year. It's sort of a horror thriller, high tech, and I have a fresh screenplay kind of making the rounds.
Nice.
That's looking for a home, wandering the cold streets of LA, looking for a home. but right now, I'm working on a new novel, and I'm also trying to get into TV. You know, there's so many opportunities in television now, and there's so many new companies out there and new intelligent people that are with their doors open, looking for material. So there's more opportunity than ever, hopefully, in theory, to get something on the air. And I've been told that it's almost easier now to launch, get your own original series moving forward than to get staffed on a series. As absurd as it may sound.
You know, we've heard that a lot, that's where it's at.
Yeah.
You know, television right now, it's a different era. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's completely, and I think it's still, I mean, they call it the streaming wars because there's so many streamers out there, but it's still in progress. It's still blossoming. And no one really knows how high it can go, but there's, the writers will. I promise I wasn't going to get into it, but the Writers Guild contract is up in May, and they're looking to negotiate new points for the streaming, because it's such a changing world and such a differing world than what it used to be, that they want to sort of handle issues now before it gets too out of control, which is not already.
Right.
But,
exactly.
So it's
right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the industry is in constant state of evolution and constant turmoil, both good and bad. You know, it's really like a flowing river. So it would really be nice if it was just a static entity that you went out there, you knew how everything worked, you knew where the money flowed, but it's constantly changing.
Right?
You know, the flexibility and the ability to adapt creatively and business-wise.
Right.
I mean, it's critical. And that kind of low-level stress hangs over the town at times, because everyone's wondering what's next, what will it be here to bring. But that's also what makes it exciting. So, I mean, screenwriters and authors should be excited, because everywhere I go, they're looking for IP, they're asking for novels, they're asking for books, they're in need of stories. And if you're a storyteller, now's a good time to be alive. Technology is on your side. So there is.
I agree.
It is a good time. So people should be, optimistic.
I think that's fantastic, and I'm glad that you said that, because you know what? Underneath it all, that is what we all are. We are storytellers, and we have different formats and different ways of doing it. But you know what? There will always be a need for stories, and in various formats. And I think it's fantastic. We are almost out of time, but before I let you go. If our listeners wanted to learn more about you and your work or what you do, where could they go and find that out?
Well, I mean, on Twitter, I'm at Brad Keene. I'm not too crazy on social media. They can also find me on Facebook and also Goodreads. I have a page on there. And Instagram, I'm trying to get back into. But so I'd say Twitter or Facebook. I'm around. I'm reachable.
Great.
All right. All right. Well, you know what? We will keep in touch, and we're looking forward to having you on again. And if you have any news to share at any time or just want to come back and whatever, anytime, you let us know, and we will happily have you back. It's been great having you.
Look,
and I mean
so,
that. Yeah, let us know.
I'm so happy we finally got this done. But,
I know, right?
I'd love to come back sometime, and then especially with some news and some good news. And it'd be great to
absolutely.
Talk to
you. Absolutely. And again, thank you. Thank you for being on. It was a delight meeting you, technically meeting you. And we wish you the best. And like I said, we'll keep
we
in
do.
Touch. And you're welcome back anytime. And thank you for being on. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next week, we wish you haunted nights.
And sweet screams.
Thank you for listening.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.